One of the things that just I was feeling into, Isabel, was when you were saying you really wanted to create a Kalyanamitta group and a book club group. I think that for any Sangha who've been together, whether you've been together a long time or not, I'll go into a little bit of what Ananda, actually, the sutta that speaks to Ananda going to the Buddha and saying, I just spoke with someone and I told them that spiritual friendship and spiritual camaraderie is half the holy life. And the Buddha immediately came to him and said, "No, Ananda, don't say that. Spiritual friendship is the whole of the holy life." And so just listening to the desire and the wanting to come together, and not just in Sangha, but in these specialized places of Kalyanamitta, spiritual friendships, as well as creating a book club and walking this path together. It just felt so wholesome. So I just really want to applaud you all for your efforts of coming together and being together in that way. So congratulations, and may this really materialize as you would like it to go for you. So thank you so much for listening to that. So, dear Sangha, it has been a while since I don't think I came last year at all. I think my schedule was really a little complicated and wonky. So it's really great to be here with you now. And for years, I would come in person and I would love to drive over from the East Bay over to the church and, being able to look out and just see all your faces. But this is good too. This is just as good seeing you this way. And perhaps next year you'll still be doing hybrids and then I can come and see you. So, but I want to take a moment to talk about my topic tonight. And it's so timely. My topic tonight is one of the clearest tenets that the Buddha gave us in his teachings. And he gave us a lot, as you know. Just how to walk this path, how to actually move from suffering to the potentiality of liberation and freedom. But these teachings that I'm going to talk about are some of the most fundamental and foundational ones in our belief systems, in the Buddhist belief systems and the cosmology. And it's the three gems, the triple jewels, the three refuges. That is, of course, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And you all did so beautifully, recited that as you do every single practice period when you come together in Sangha, your Sangha meetings, and you do that. And it's interesting because I was going to have us go ahead and recite the refuges, but we've already done that. So I'm just going to move on into, well, I do want to say this. When I every day, not every day, but when I do my own personal practice, that's how I begin my practice. That's my ground. That's what I'm able to be resourced with. So I begin with honoring the Enlightened One. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa, and I do that three times. And then I take the refuges for myself. That's how I ground myself into practice. I start to settle at that point. And from then, and I do that in when I'm in retreat, and I do that even in my own personal practice. And in Buddhism, these three classical gateways, they open us up to a richness and a spacious awareness, a spirit of freedom. These three, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, these triple gems, are archetypes. It's not necessarily unique to the Buddhist cosmology, because these gateways are found in many spiritual traditions. And we'll go into some of this later on in the talk. But there are ways in which we remember and we pay attention to those openings of time and space, awareness in the heart. And it starts to burgeon out from there. And we pay attention to the historical vows and virtues, rituals and spiritual openings. And again, it's not necessarily unique to Buddhism, taking refuge, but in this case, these traditional refuges are an ancient practice, and they're still relevant today. As I said, even in my own practice, this is what grounds me. This is what takes me, brings me forth. And especially when we're faced with some internal dangers. And it was the same 2,600 years ago in the Buddhist time. We still need the same protection as they did then. Protection against Mara, protection against mind, manipulation of the mind. The hindrances are very real in the mind, of course, while practicing and while just living in our daily thoughts. When a Buddhist takes refuge, it's essentially an act of taking refuge in the doctrine of karma. To take refuge in this way ultimately means to take refuge in the quality of our own intentions, for that which the essence of karma lies. With wise intention, one of those eightfold pathways. In his teaching, the Buddha points to very subtle urge felt in the beginning of action, intention. The Buddha tells us that intention is active not only in the things we do, but also in what we say, and also in what we think. It's the force that drives action through the body, through the speech, through the mind, through the heart. It's like the rudder of the ship. Right intention is actually supported by three of the other fold path factors: wise view, wise effort, wise mindfulness. Right view or wise view is the blueprint. You know, you're building a house and you have to look at something. That is the view. That's that place of understanding, of clarity. Wise mindfulness is remembering to refer back to the blueprint. And wise effort is the building of the house. That's where the action begins. That's what part of the intention. So I'm going to be blending a little bit of talk with poetry, which I love to do. So I'm going to talk a little bit about each of these incredible gems that we talk about. The first refuge is the refuge of the Buddha, which is really the Buddha nature in all of us. We can't set ourselves as separate from that. It's that sense of moment-to-moment presence. It's also refuge in wisdom, panya, that clarity of mind. And we work up to that. It's a cultivation. It doesn't happen immediately. But it is the beginning of that gateway that we open up into the refuge of the Buddha. As part of your wise intention, one of those path factors, you might say, when thinking about taking refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the still heart of the Buddha, in the stillness and the peacefulness that's available to me in the potential for awakening and the compassion found in each one of us. And I use the word potential purposefully. And oftentimes, maybe you have heard me say this, I have been on this path of the Dhamma path, for over 25 years. And I couldn't have stayed on this path because I was guaranteed freedom. I've stayed on the path because of the potential for freedom. Because I realize that if I do this work, if I continue to look at the nature of my mind, I have the potential to actually find the way, the process of ending the cessation of suffering. So I use the word potential awakening rather purposefully. And from that, I'm going to share with you a poem. It's called Jyntha the Conqueror. It's from the book, The First Free Women, Poems of Early Buddhist Nuns. And many of you probably have heard or have this particular book. And it was put together by Maddie Weingast. And actually, Ayananda Bodhi also helped him bring together these words. So this is a poem called Jyntha the Conqueror. I was forever getting lost until one day the Buddha told me, to walk this path, you will need seven friends. Mindfulness, curiosity, courage, joy, calm, stillness, and perspective. For many years, these friends of mine and I have traveled together, sometimes wandering in circles, sometimes taking the long way around. There were days when I thought I couldn't go on. There were days when I thought I was finally beaten. It's scary to give yourself to just one thing. What if you don't make it? Oh, my dear, you don't have to go it alone. Train yourself to train just a little bit more gently. And I love that poem. It reminds me of the refuge that we can take in our Buddha nature. Again, it's called Jyntha the Conqueror. So I'm going to go jump into the second refuge. That is the refuge of the Dhamma. It is the ultimate truth. When we are experiencing the path or have been called to the path of awakening, the Dharma path, we are seeing what's true, knowing what is reality, that which is arising and passing away moment to moment, without the confusion of the mind. When the mind is settled, it leans itself into bare awareness. We then begin to sense into the overarching experience of sati, mindfulness, and the deliverance of the true nature of our mind. As part of your wise effort, again, the path factor, you might say, when thinking about taking refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Dharma in this path of purification. In training the mind in mindfulness, connecting with the moment of mindfulness. In concentration, keeping the mind steady, clear, available, all in service to the cultivation of wise effort. In living a life based on kindness. Oh, just hearing that feels as though my heart just opened. Living a life based in compassion and in renunciation, in freeing the heart and the mind from its own entanglements. How many times have you felt that constriction and the inability to be available to the truth of the Dhamma? How many times have we let go, renunciated, let go of all of the constraints that hold us, the entanglements, and have felt almost the pleasure, the blissfulness of having the Dhamma actually reach us and free us. So with that, I'm going to do another poem. This one, I don't have a title to it, but it's by Hafiz, the Iranian Persian poet. And, you know, sometimes I digress, so I'm going to digress for a minute. This poem, in addition to the refuges, I say this poem every day. I really do. And recently, last fall, I was at Forest Refuge and I was sitting for a month. And as soon as I went into the hall, this was my recitation. and I'll read it to you now. I sometimes forget that I was created for joy. My mind is too busy. My heart is too heavy to remember that I have been called to dance the sacred dance of life. I was created to smile, to love, to be lifted up, and to lift others up. O Sacred One, untangle my feet from all that ensnares. Free my soul so that we may dance, and that our dancing might be contagious. And if you would allow me one more time, I would love to say that again. Sometimes I forget that I was created for joy. My mind is too busy, my heart is too heavy to remember that I've been called to dance the sacred dance of life. I was created to smile, to love, to be lifted up and to lift others up. O Sacred One, untangle my feet from all that ensnares. Free my soul so that we may dance and that our dancing might be contagious. If that's not, it hits you right here, doesn't it? It speaks to the freeing of the mind and the awareness that when we are ensnared, that we can release ourselves. That brings me to tears, so. But I say that every day. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the third refuge, which I talked a little bit just a moment before I started, and that was this idea of your spiritual community, and that is the Sangha. The third refuge is embedded in the heart and in the divine practices of creating Sangha. The Sangha, which represents the spiritual community and friendships, is really that which is embedded in the refuge of relationships, wise relations. We belong to love. We belong to awareness. We belong to truth. The culmination of being united with others in trust. As part of your path and cultivation of another path factor, wise loving kindness, you might say when you begin to take refuge in the Sangha, I take refuge in the Sangha, the community of beings with awakened hearts, whose love and compassion support me. May I awaken for the benefit of all beings everywhere. That might be how you take refuge in the Sangha. And with that, I'll share another poem. This is called Sangha by Christy Sharshell. Namaste, my friend. I see the light inside you. No matter the joy or sorrow that's in your heart right now, let us sit together in noble silence. Or conscious conversation. Let us grow together with compassion and healing grace. Let us wake up together, each as a mirror to the other, a reminder of the goodness and the truth of who we are. And I just want to say that when you go to refuge, to any one of these three precious pathways, just know that they hold a unifying essence as well. The three are not separate refuges. Each are sufficient into itself, but they are interconnected parts of a single affective refuge, which divides into three by way of distinction in the characteristics and functions of its parts, but they are one. The refuges in Buddhism, both on the internal and the external level, the triple gems, as they're called, embody the name gems, both because they're valuable in our daily practice, but also in the cultivation of one-pointed practice, samadhi. And because in ancient times, gems were believed to have protective qualities and powers. I believe that even today. The triple gems outdo other gems in this respect because of those protective powers. And they have been put to the test over and over again for these past 2,600 years and can lead further than those of any other physical gem. This Buddha, this Dharma, the Sangha, all the way to absolute freedom from the uncertainties of the realm of aging, illness, and death, as spoken by the Buddha in the Five Recollections. And here's a story I want to share with you. I recently was listening to a Dharma talk by Tara Brach, and it just illuminates this gem-like quality of the refuges and the tenets of the refuges. So a diamond thief who used to hang around the diamond district to see if any of the big dealers were coming to buy diamonds. And one well-known merchant came in and bought one of the biggest, most beautiful of the gems. And so this thief decided to get it from him, no matter how he was going to do it. So he followed him onto a train. And for 3 days, this merchant was traveling on a train, and the thief did everything, every trick that he had up his sleeve, every craftiness in order to try to steal it. This guy was pretty good. I mean, he was a jewel thief. And he was very frustrated because as accomplished as he was, he could not find that diamond. So in the end, he finally went up to the merchant and he said, "I have to confess to you." He confronted the merchants and he said, "You know, I've been tracking you for 3 days. And I just want to say, I'm just really baffled. I cannot find how I can steal your diamond from you." He was totally frustrated. And the merchant calmly looked at him and said, "Well, I saw you. And it felt a little suspicious. And so I put it in one place you'd never find it. I put it in your own pocket." And so what I love about this story is really kind of the treasure you seek is closer than you can even imagine. We always are seeking outside of ourselves for some kind of satisfaction or whatever that might be. And we find ourselves suffering even more and more in these states of frustration or weariness or just basically we don't know where we're going. We're going in circles, as one of the poems just said. It's really in the eyes that are looking, the ears that are listening. It's in the heart right now. That's the feeling. It's within. It's the core of your being. So when we're looking at the gems and the jewels, they're not outside ourselves. The Buddha nature is in here. The Dharma, the truth, is within ourselves. The Sangha is how we create a community to be held together with. And in the Dharmapala, there's a chapter, chapter 13, the Buddha speaks about refuges, and he explains what true refuges are. Many people, shaken by fear, go for refuge to mountains and woods, to places with beautiful trees. That's not a secure refuge. That's not the refuge of the Supreme. Nor is it the refuge that comes to that liberates from all suffering. Whoever has gone for refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and who sees it really as the Four Noble Truths, that is secure refuge. That is the refuge supreme. That is a refuge that comes, that liberates from all suffering. That's the Buddha speaking. So as I've been working a lot with these refuges and in my own life, in my own practice. But one of the things that have been showing up for me is, where do I take refuge? Where do I go to refuge? This is a poignant question, and it often lingers in the mind, and we sometimes are not really clear about where our intentions are. When we haven't tasted the nectar of direct experience or have wise understanding of a deeper knowing, then we need to look a little deeper and hold that place of faith, sadha. Allow that to be the guide to bring us deeper into the path of the refuges. And refuge is a development in calming and stilling the mind that becomes more robust and more concentrated, perhaps the longer and the more in-depth you become in your practice. And perhaps those answers either become blatantly clear or understood, or they elicit more questions yet, and they're not quite being answered. But I believe it's okay to stay in the question, because something else starts to blossom from there. I said earlier that I thought that the refuges is an archetype, and it's seen in many, many spiritual worlds. The rituals of recitation, devotional practices, and chanting is rich and often an untapped process of honoring, whether it's the Buddha, Christ-like nature, divine nature that dwells within all of us. So I've been looking at these refuges from different traditions, ancient traditions, actually. In Christianity, there's the Holy Trinity. And I grew up in the church. So I grew up knowing that, you know, the God, the Father, Jesus, the Holy Spirit. So God the Father, the creator, the sustainer of all things. The Son, the incarnation of God as a human being, Jesus Christ, right on earth. The Holy Spirit, the power of God, which is active in the world, drawing people towards the belief in a loving, omnipotent God. And I just found out that the Holy Spirit is actually thought of as the feminine aspect of the Trinity, the Holy Trinity. So these are, again, ancient traditions where people take refuge. In Islam, the five pillars, the profession of faith, prayer, alms, fasting, the pilgrimage, the Hajj. Again, refuges that people go to in ancient traditions. Judaism, the five moral codes. Monotheism, the Torah, the covenant, resurrection, judgment. Again, places in which we go to refuge. Ancient African religions and traditions, all steeped really in earth-based practices and ancestral veneration. There are traditions like the Ifa, the Yoruba, Haiti Voodoo, the Dagara, amongst others. And perhaps there are so many others that you've taken refuge in your life. Maybe it's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Is that a refuge? Is that a tenet? Is that a value, a virtue that you have gone to refuge with? Perhaps it's Martin Luther King's profound statement I've decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. Is that something that we rest our hat on? We go to refuge with? Maybe it's Malcolm X's proclamation for the fight of our freedom by any means necessary. Perhaps you go to refuge with Ram Dass's famous quote, "Be here now." Or Oscar Wilde saying, "Be yourself, everyone else is already taken." Or perhaps you take refuge in Mother Earth, her magic, her medicine, her mystery, her ever-forgiving ways of continuously holding us in her grace. All of these are principles and values and virtues and vows. We look deeply into our reservoir of our own innate goodness to uphold and honor and share and teach them. These are things that we teach our children and our children's children. These are things that we learn from our parents and our foreparents, foremothers and fathers, our grandparents and beyond. Where do you go for refuge? Is it just in the three gems? Or is there something else in your life? Another principle, another tenet, another virtue, high virtue, that ethical place that you know you can always be resourced back to. Tenesero Biko Ajahn Jeff said this: in times of crisis, we often feel we don't have the time or energy to practice. But those are precisely the times when practice is most necessary. This is what we've been practicing for, the situations where the practice doesn't come easy. He further says, when the winds of change reach hurricane force, our inner refuge of mindfulness, concentration, and discernment is the only thing that will keep us from getting blown away. When we can be secure in our inner source of true happiness, we don't expose ourselves to the devastation that comes when outside hopes for happiness and security are dashed. We have our shelter, our place of security, inside. And we needn't be afraid that this is an escapist shelter. When the basis of our well-being is firm within, we can act with true courage and compassion for others. For we're coming from a solid position of calmness and strength. The treasure is closer than we can even imagine. There is a poem I've been reading lately. It's from the Hopi elders. It's called "We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For." And I'm just going to paraphrase a piece of it. Just say a piece of it. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. At this time, take nothing personally, especially yourself. For when you do, your spiritual growth becomes halted. We don't have to look outside ourselves. We can go to refuge within ourselves, the true refuge. This is the heart of the matter. This is the soul work that we're doing. The triple gems: the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And whether you take refuge in Mother Earth, go to refuge and know that it's all within yourself. Nothing is coming from outside. That Buddha nature is pure. It is your own innate goodness. And so again, the treasure you seek is really closer than you think. And I'm going to see if, here it is. If you would just be kind enough to let me say this poem, I think it's just perfect for this evening. And this is the poem, We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For. You have been telling people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your water? Know your garden. It's time to speak your truth. Create your community. Be good to each other. And do not look outside yourself for the leader. This could be a good time. There's a river flowing now very fast, and it's so great and swift that there will be those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they're being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. Know the river has its destination. The elders say we must go, let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above water. See who is in with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Thank you, dear ones. The treasure you seek is closer than you can imagine. Let's just sit for a moment. And allow the words just to float away and feel the presence of love in your body and in your heart. Feel into the Buddha nature, the truth of the Dhamma, the preciousness of Sangha.